session number 30398, Mr. Nathan Ritt, 304. Now, what happened after your pass-out parade? You know, you go on to continuation.
Straight away, you go on to continuation, which is a further 10 weeks.
Now, tell me about that. How was that different, or was it just...
Well, completely, because first of all, when your basic training, all you're doing is learning like saluting steps and changing it. But when you go forward, it's a completely different ball game. Then you start travelling, you start on these long marches by gradually getting longer and longer and longer. Your weapon training gets more intense.
How did you cope with the route marches?
No problem at all. No problem at all. In fact, we used to do, we did a cross-country 10 or 12 mark. I came in sixth. And they were treating like 100 yards. They were all flying along, and I was just plodding along, and I was just passing, and they were all falling out. And see, the longer it went on, I was a long-distance runner, really, I found out.
So this is, it wasn't just route marches, it was cross-country?
Cross-country, night exercises all night long, staying out, learning how to dig little trenches, bivouac, putting, so that we used to have a poncho. They don't have them now. It was like a rubberized thing which you could make into a tent, use it as a tent, and all the and schemes. And as I say, it was all concentrating on warfare.
And what were the schemes like? The tactical exercise, you know, attacking.
Oh, they were very tough on you. One they used to fire real ammunition at you, and you had to do all these. Go through these, which I said, I think, earlier on, you do this assault call, but the assault calls changed completely. They've started firing that live ammunition at you, and they keep your bottom down, worse than that, and don't, keep going, and don't run out, you get soaking wet, your clothes were dry on you, which doesn't do you any good, but being young, you can get through it all. And we used to run, everything was run, double, run, mate, get. And used to be, as I said, I was fit. But now, I'm even fitter now. I've been weak. We used to do all these, run a mile in so many, under a certain time. Run 100 yards in 100, in certain time. All full pack on, see how you can run 100 yards. I think I told you, I carried a man on the back of and I held the, I don't know if it's still going, but I held the 100 yards record with a man on my back with full kit. And I was very strong. I was a tough boy, I could do lots of things. And as I said, they were, and on our hut where we were, it had K, the letter K. And we said, yeah, we know what this, no, it's just a code. We knew that this was, we were training for the Korean War.
Now, was it just a rumour or,
Well, I think it was a nod, wink, sort of rumour that, it could do. And we were waiting because we thought we were going to transfer into the Royal Ulster Rifles, because the Ulster Rifles were in Korea. And they were taken, once the regiment came out, like ours did eventually, they went to Hong Kong like we did. But they sport themselves. They knifed a bloke and threw him over the back. Well, they went home in disgrace. So obviously we couldn't go into the Royal Ulster Rifles. The next thing, there was trouble in Suez at the time, not the one that came later, but the one that was earlier. There was lots of trouble there. So I think we were held back in case we had to go out to reinforce out of there. So really and truly, they were like this. They didn't really know what to do with it. It was like a balance. That's why we went out so late. After the 10 weeks, I went on.
Anything happened during the 10 weeks that you can call to, just any stories?
Not really. They picked me out as a leader, and there was two of us, but the other bloke got it. But he was invalided out of the army. His nose started to bleed, and I think he had cancer somewhere. And this is passing the May 1, and his father came and he burst out crying like a baby. He absolutely burst out like a baby. Anyway, none of us were made up, and the bloke called Doughty, but he as
made
I said,
up to what, sir?
To Lance Corporal, because that was the first step up. Anyway, yeah. they didn't seem to bother, because I thought the reason why was we were getting transferred to another regiment, and if you Lance Corporal, you have to take it off, because you have to be 3 months before it's verified, so they didn't bother. Anyway, we
so how long were you at Ballykinler altogether?
Ballykinler, we came back again after we had our first leave after 10 weeks. We went home for 9 days, I think it was. Then we came back, and they sent so many of us to Lisbon, which was the headquarters, and they were holding an inter-regiment or inter-army, Air Force, you know, when they do athletics, they were all doing, and they wanted us to just pick up all the things, and we had a nice time there for 2 weeks. The cooking there was fantastic, because it was headquarters. It was all chef cooking. We thought, blimey, we're living like we were in thing, and they're living like lords, you know. Anyway, after 2 weeks, I went back to Ballykinler, and they said, right, you're going to join the Inniskillen Regiment at the Dover Castle. So we all...
When did you go to Dover?
Well, it was in the summer, I know, because my first leave was in the summer. So it must have been about the end of June, beginning of July, we got to Dover. Anyway, we all went to Dover, and it was a very old...
Was this a depot, or were you joining the battalion?
I was joining the Inniskillen battalion, which was stationed at Dover.
So that's the 1st Battalion?
1st Battalion in the Skinning Regiment.
Were you in Dover Castle or the camp?
Yeah. Well, the camp, well, we called it the castle, because when we went for 48-hour leave, you got up, walked all the way up, and you see it all lit up, and we used to get to the top, to the guardhouse, 1 minute to midnight, because if you come afterwards, you're AWOL. So we all used to charge in. Yeah, the corporal blah, 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 used to go in. And, that's right, they sent us to Colchester on a scheme for 6 weeks.
Now, hang on. So, what were you doing? How long were you at Dover Castle? What were you actually doing there?
We left Dover Castle. We went on a scheme to... I'm just trying to think how long we were at Dover Castle.
What were you doing there?
Training. Just doing normal regimental parades. Oh, that's right. When we first got there, we all went on parade, and we were the new intake. And the Sergeant Major came around. He was looking for men to go to do the Duke of Gloucester, not the one that's now, the old Duke of Gloucester, he was our Colonel-in-Chief, so he was coming down and he wanted to pick 30 men. Anyway, he got to me, and he went round me once, he went round me twice, and he went round me 3 times. And then there was a bloke here, who was at the side, a regular, a right scrub, and he went to him, "That's how you turn out, and that's a bloody pair of boots," because as I told you, my boots were, and the sergeant came up to take my name to go on, he said, quietly, "He can't believe you. You're better turned out than he is." And he was laughing, you know, smirking at the side of his face. "I was better turned out than an RSM." Anyway, I went on this thing. He just looked us up and down, and it was all over in half an hour, you know, and finished. Then we went. We kept going on. We could get.
You were picked out, and then you were inspected by the Duke. What happened with the Duke of Gloucester?
He just looked us up and down. Didn't say a word, and you just would walk around, you know, like they do with ceremonial thing. It was just a thing to welcome him into to Dover, you know. There was 30 of us on parade that day. A couple of my blokes that were with me, they were in the same with us. And then some of the blokes that I was with, for some unknown reason, started to disappear. They all went to different things, you know. I didn't go on a signal course. One bloke went on the signal course. One bloke signed on as a regular, and he transferred to the Royal Army Ordnance Corps. And he saw me, and he said, "Why don't you do the same? You don't want to go to Korea." He said, "Get out of it. Sign up for what's an extra year?" And I thought, oh, I don't know. I don't know why I didn't do it, but I could have done. And he said, "I've signed up for the Royal Army, because once you're regular, you can pick out your own regiment." And that's what he did. So, and there were several others who were different. One bloke was transferred to the Essex Regiment. Why, I don't know. Quite a few of the intake that with me were disappeared. Some I don't know what happened to. Do you know what I mean? They just disappeared.
Now, why didn't you sign on as a regular? Because you really liked it.
I did, but I was a funny guy. I thought to myself, I don't know. Well, I don't know. Why do I want to sign on for another year, you know? But really and truly, I should have done, and I could have got out of Korea, and I could have gone into the regiment that what I wanted was the Royal Army Ordnance Corps. And there was a few others that... Oh, that's right, a bloke was with me. Manny, his name was. And he used to pretend his leg, his feet, he couldn't walk. So he used to go sick every blooming morning. He went sick and sick, and eventually he disappeared. They put him in the Royal Pioneer Corps. I didn't know this till after, because I met him a few years later.
Was he malingering? I mean, was he?
He wanted to work his ticket. He wanted to get out of the army, and he thought by doing this, they would get. But he didn't. They were clever. They put him in the Royal. Because I met him 2 years afterwards, and he said, "Hello, how are you?" So I said, "I'm fine." And he said, "Oh," he said, "I wish I hadn't done what I did." He said, "I wish I'd come." I said, "Why is that, man?" He said, "They put me in the Royal Pioneer Corps, and all I did was dig ditches all day long." And I thought, well, that's why they got back at him. And he said, "Yeah, I made a mistake." But that's...
Now, you went to... What's this scheme at Colchester you went to?
Oh, this was a scheme to get to toughen us up. They put us out in, you know, we were... We didn't stay in barracks or anything. We were always in tent, or we dug ditches. And it was always schemes were going on all virtually all the time. So it was 6 weeks of really hard training with weapons and everything to toughen us up for career, you see. So
anything special about it, or was it just more of the same, really?
Well, it just increased in the amount we did, you know, till we got really, really finely tuned. Every gun and everything, well, they made sure we fired it to as best as we could, and lots of us were very good at it. You know, some were never going to be any good, no matter how many years they trained. And that's what we did. And then after 6 weeks, they said to us, right, you're getting transferred to the Royal Norfolk Regiment. We thought, oh, no. So we all...
Now, why did you act like that? What was wrong with the Royal Norfolks?
Well, we didn't know it. We didn't want to go into the Royal Norfolk, to stay in the Inniskin Infusion here, you see. Because we were, I don't know, once you go into one regiment, you don't want to leave the regiment. It's like a regular. Once you get into a regiment, you don't want to leave any other regiment. You want to stay in the regiment that you were trained in. Anyway, they said, you're going into the Royal Norfolk. And we thought, oh, God.
Now, when was this?
This was... About September 9 or August, September 1951. This would be. We went down to.
Where did you join them?
We went to Bury's and Edmunds, and there we had to change our things on there, the flashes on our arm. They took the hat away and gave
that,
us.
That was their depot, was it?
Yeah, it was their depot. It was right virtually on a main road, I remember. And it was awful. The huts there were absolutely terrible. I know it was cold, that's right, because the fire buckets froze. It was so cold in there. It
didn't sound much like September.
No, it must have been a bit... No, I'm sure it was, must have been September. September, it must have been October. And then...
Now, what were you doing there? What new uniform or stuff did you get there?
Well, all we got was change the... flashes on her arm from Royal Inniskin Infusionist to the Royal Norfolks. They also used to have a lanyard, a yellow lanyard, which used to go into our what it attached to. Nothing, actually. It was part of that. And then we got the ordinary hats, which, you know, the berries, which were, and the little badge, which was the Britannia badge. And that's what we got.
Did they give you any briefing on the regiment, you know, try and get you...
No, not really. They just said, you're in the Royal Norfolk. We didn't know anything about them. We didn't know what they were, where they were from, nothing. Because the Bury St Edmunds was... See, there was the Royal Norfolk Regiment, the Essex Regiment, and there was a Cambridgeshire Regiment, and then there was another regiment.
So this was the East Anglian Brigade depot?
Yeah, but it wasn't called East Anglian Brigade then.
What was it called?
It was just called the basic thing for the Royal Norfolks, it was for the, its sister regiment, not the Norfolks, what was it?
Suffolks.
The Suffolks, that's what it was. We were in the basic, we were in the training area for the Suffolks. Why we were there, I don't know. Anyway, we were going home. They said, oh, you're not going anywhere now, you can go home for a week. So they gave us a week's pass.
Now, was that embarkation leave?
No, this wasn't even embarkation leave. Anyway, we came back from that leave. We thought, right, we're going to get embarkation leave. Stayed there. No, I'm afraid there was another holdup. You can go home now for another week or 10 days. We thought, oh, this is good. You know, we're not doing anything. So we just kept going backwards. And then eventually they said, right, you'll be being shipping abroad. So what we all did, all of us were put into lorries. And we
now,
were.
Hang on, were you vaccinated first?
No,
or had you all
no,
had that number?
No. We'd had the vaccination at Ballykinler.
Now, the Norfolks were already out there, were they?
They were already out there. So what happened was, we went to London, and we went to where, I don't know if you know this, but there's old wartime shelter that went right the way down in, you have to go by lifts, all underneath Warren Street Station is, and you go down and down and down, and you think, where the bloody, and you go right into the depths of the bowels, and it's all kitted out, like beds and everything, and we stayed there for a couple of days, weren't allowed to go out.
Now, what's it like down there? Because no one knows about that.
It was secret. It was actually secret for the war that all the cabinet people used to go down there in case they were bombed so they could carry on, you know. Churchill had our place down there and everything.
And then, what was it like down
there? Oh, it was awful. It was weird. Absolutely weird. We hated it. We thought, oh, can't we get out of here? It was like we were entombed, you know. It was terrible. Anyway, we stayed there for a couple of days and they said, right, we're going back up again. So we went all the way back up with this lift and we got to the top, got in lorries again. And that took us to, I think it was Euston Station, I'm not sure. Then we got a train to Liverpool. I thought, blimey, I've gone back in a complete circle. I've gone back to Liverpool where I started from. And we got on to the docks at Liverpool, and there she was, the Georgic. I don't know if you've heard of the ship, the Georgic. She was sunk in the war and re-up. But she was a half size of the Queen Elizabeth, Queen Mary. She was 35,000 tons. She was an ex-P&O liner. Anyway, we got on to the liner, and we had cabins. Mind you, we were right downstairs. You couldn't see it. We had cabins. We had a big place where there was pictures and theatre, and we could have shows, you know. And we had lovely showers and bar. It was lovely.
And then what was your actual mess tech like?
Ours wasn't bad. It was the old third-class passenger mess deck.
Were you crowded?
No, we were in a cabin. I think there was four of us in this cabin. I'm sure there was just four. And we had beautiful toilets and baths and showers, because we used to just shower. Because we learned, obviously in the army, you shower mostly, so we just showered. And we, and...
Now, you moved on board. Now, when did you
leave? They all set us up. You know, all the people came to see us off with the bands.
Was it a big send-off?
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. But when we came back, there wasn't a soul there, but I'll tell you that. Like, the bands were playing, they were sharing, and balloons and the stickers, and I thought, oh, this is great. And then we set sail. And then, as I say, we went... while we were sailing, they said, right, you've got to have the rest.
Now, do you know when you set sail? Before Christmas?
Oh, yeah, well before Christmas, because it takes 6 weeks to get from Liverpool to where we were going.
When did you get there?
We got there just before Christmas, 1951.
So you left in November, probably? Then.
Probably left in about the beginning of November, I would say so, or the middle of November, somewhere around about that time. And of course, they said, oh, once we get out of the walk, going through the, what's the name, and coming round in the Med, you've got to change your uniform because it's so hot. So we put all our summer gear on, and it was blooming hot. We got into the Mediterranean, and then we got into
Hang on, were you seasick at all?
Never seasick. I've never been seasick in my life.
So what was life like on boat? What was routine like?
Oh, wasn't much to do, really. They tried to keep us busy, you know, and we used to have quizzes and bingo and shows, picture shows and thing, all this sort of thing, just to keep the troops. There was a bar there we could drink, you know, to a certain limit we could drink. And as I say, when we got into the hot club, we thought, blimey, it was an awful. Because what a change, we're from November into the Med, and then we hit a port called Portside, which is the entrance to the Suez Canal.
Had you got your shorts on? Like?
Yeah, we got our shorts on. And
what was the tropical kit?
Tropical kit with shorts. What was it? All our stuff was like very lightweight, you know. Like we had jackets, short sleeve jackets, shorts. We didn't wear boots on ship. We weren't allowed to because of the deck. So we had our pencils on all the time. Because any mark would mark the deck, and they wouldn't have that, you see. And as I said, we got into Portside and all these little bum boats came up, what we call them, and they're trying to sell it. And some of the blokes are buying watches that don't work because they're taking your money. And I said, I'm not. And we were, get out, you sods. And they were shouting, you know, and they were swearing at us and we were swearing back at them. Go back to England where you belong, you know. And anyway, we set sail and we went.
You didn't get ashore at Portside then?
No, we weren't allowed at Portside. No way. Because there was trouble in Egypt at the time and they didn't want us to get on a. Anyway, we started through the Suez Canal and it was absolutely fantastic. At night, the sunset was like red. I've never seen colours like it. And we used to think, well, how does this ship get through such a narrow thing? And it did. It sailed all the way through till it came out to the other side, which is called Ismailia. You come out there and then you come into Aden. Oh, what a dump Aden was. God. The Arabs all...
Did you get ashore then?
No. We weren't allowed in Aden at all. As I said, there was trouble out there. They didn't want the British soldiers. They had a British garrison out there, but they didn't want us to cause any problems. And all these Arabs were there, you know, on their... Christ, the first time I've ever seen an Arab, you know. And they all looked like Omar Sharif, you know. And we went through the Suez, as I said, we came out, and then we hit the Indian Ocean, Red Sea, Indian Ocean, and the next port of call was Colombo, which was then Ceylon, which is now Sri Lanka. We were allowed to get off, and we got off at Ceylon, but that was Colombo, and that was, they had trams there. They ran around a little tram. I don't remember mine, but the first time I'd ever seen Indian. I'd never seen an Indian before. Anyway, we got back on the ship, and the next port...
What did you do ashore? I mean, we just got
through... I don't remember. We just walked around, looked around, all the stalls. You know, they're trying to sell you things, obviously. We didn't want them because we didn't have a lot of money. They wouldn't give us much money. So, anyway, we didn't bother. So we went back. It was just to see, you know, just somewhere to get off the boat and break the monotony of being on the water. We got back on the boat, and we set sail again. We didn't hit the next port until Singapore. And there, we got off at Singapore. We were allowed to get off at Singapore. And also, we looked around. But the next time I went there, that I'll tell you what happened was all different. Anyway, we came out. We went set sail again from Singapore, and the next one we hit was Busan, which was Korea.
So you went straight in.
I didn't get off at Busan, Korea that time. We were going on to Japan. Quite a few boats got off at Busan. And I'll tell you what, the first thing I said to my friends was, I don't understand it. And they said, what is it? I said, listen, it was complete. So not a bird, nothing, twittered or anything. That, you know, usually you have seagulls, don't you? I'm screaming in and when you, nothing. It was like a morgue. I can't tell you what a terrible atmosphere it was, you know. And I thought, yeah, this is a war zone. This is why. Anyway, we pulled out of Busan. And the next one we went to was Hong Kong. We were allowed to get off at Hong Kong, but I don't think I can't remember much getting off there. I do the sectors, I was stationed there. Then we got back on the boat, and the last port call was Kure. We got into Kure. We got off the ship, and there was lorries again. They took us to the camp. It was a camp that used to be the Japanese camp, you know, soldiers' camp, and we took it over. And I showed you those pictures. I was taken in Kure.
So you got there in December, just before Christmas?
We got there just before Christmas, because I remember we had our Christmas dinner. But I didn't have my Christmas dinner there. This is where it's all different. You see, this is where we got off. It must have been at least 10 days or something before Christmas, or two or something. Anyway, we got off, we got to Kure, and we got in a Kure, and I don't know what we did. Nothing. We didn't actually. Anyway, I was...
No duties, no training.
No, nothing. All of a sudden, bloke came up. He said, "Major, sir, I can't remember. Wants to see you in his office right away." I thought, "Oh my God, what have I been well done?" You know. So I go, you know how you go to you. Yeah, get in there. Boom, 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 boom. Right. He said, "Ritz," he said, "how do you feel like going on a signals course?" So I said, yeah, no, you know, I'm quite. I mean, so he said, "How quick can you pack?" Oh, I said, "Half an hour." He said, "No, 20 minutes." He said, "There's a lorry going to be out here by so-and-so hours. You'll be on it with your kit. You're going to a place called Hiro, up in the Japanese mountain. And there you'll be on a 6 weeks course. And I thought, oh, right. So I went up to Hiro. And that's when I had my Christmas dinner in Hiro. And I always remember this Christmas. Oh, it's funny. We the first time I'd ever tasted chemical beer, because we always used to drink beer which was fermented in, you know, with hops and all that. Because the person who was started all this brewery was the bloke who was my commanding chief that was on the other day. The whole story of him was on, what's his name, the big general. There was a film about him the other day. I was watching it. Oh, God. He was in charge anyway. He was in charge of the whole Japan. He built Japan back then, because the Korean War came along, and that was right in time for building up Japanese, because that way they made all the arms and everything out, and the ammunition they made in Japan and sent it straight over there. Anyway.
Now, what was this this chemical beer? So what was it like?
Well, none of them wanted to drink it, you see, so I said, I'll drink it. And I was knocking it back and knocking it back, because I had...
What did it taste like? Was it all right, or...?
Oh, it just... She'd like, I don't know what it tastes, because after you had a few, you don't care what it tastes like. And I was eating my dinner, I ate my dinner, because the officers always serve you when Christmas, they come round. So anybody hasn't had a Christmas, I said, oh, I haven't had my Christmas dinner. So I had another dinner. Anyway, I was supposed to play football in the afternoon. And when I woke up, I found myself roped in, they'd roped me with ropes on my bed. And I thought, how did I get like that? And they said, you went mad. They said you were a nutcase. I said, you're joking, aren't you? They said, they took five of us to hold you down. He said, you just went berserk. And we had to put these ropes around you to stop you getting mad. I said, I want to play. And they said, you can't, you know. Anyway, well, no, I thought, oh. And I went out again to the bar in the evening. And they Japanese whiskey was Tori. It was called Tori. Tori or Tori, something like that. And I drank the whole bottle of that, but I was all right. And then... went through the course.
Tell me about the training. What were you being trained in? What you
signaler.
Now, what does that entail? What did you have to learn?
I had to learn how to work the radio and how to, if it broke down, I had to make sure that I knew what was wrong with it.
Now, how do you work? Which wireless was it and how did you operate?
Oh, my God, you're talking about now. Grand hell, that's going back 50-odd years. It was as big as this.
About 2'6" across.
Yeah, and it had a range of about 12, 13 miles, and it had a zero beat, because you had to find where it went, and that was when you were in tune. You had to go, because radio waves go like they bounce. We had to learn that the short wave, long wave, and the long wave hits the, well, not used to hit the ground, medium wave hugged the ground, a short wave hugs the floor. So the medium wave was middle, shortwave at the ground. So we learnt all that. Then we had to learn why we had to learn about neutrons, protons, and I've no idea. I don't know what that had to do with signalling. I don't know. He said, "Well, you will now. You're up to university standard in electronics. We were learning all about this. I don't know what it had to do with." And then the next thing we had to learn on the telephone exchange. Learn how to set up telephones, how to charge batteries. Well, the telephone we had to set up, and so the way they got training, they used to put us on a civilian, and we were sitting there with a great big ball with a thing on there with a thing. There's all operators either side, all jabbering away, and they've called. Yeah, you got to keep make sure you answer. Because a lot of them are Japanese, you go, hi, hi, and after that, I don't understand anything. No. And this is how they sort of got you to get quicken up your, so that you would, well, you knew that each call came in. And then you went on to an army one, which was completely different. It was about this, it was like this length, and it had all things, and you learned how to do multiple calls. One man would call, you'd call up A, B, C, and D company. You call up the colonel, and each one you knew that you could line up so that each one talked to each other. Then you'd ask, are you finished? Oh, yeah, boom, 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 take them all out again. Oh, God. It was,